straight. No hype, no fear. We are TFFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing today? I hope you all are doing awesome. I myself am doing awesome and really appreciate you guys being here today. Give me 2 seconds because I got to finish a little comment in the chat room because we are live right now, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JD. This is, of course, the Red Pill Report, a radio broadcast. Today is the 7th day of April. And as we are live, you can hop over to truthfrequencyradio.com and jump into the chat room. We're already having some discussions about the absolutely crazy, amazing Kev Baker show last night, ladies and gentlemen. I have to tell you, I was going to do a little bit more of a spiel before I got into this, but I was really happy to see everybody talking about it already in the chat room. Holy cow. Let's just say that if you did not hear Kev and Joe, I think they did 3 hours with Anthony Patch last night talking about CERN and the occult. It was about the most, I've never said wow more many times. More times listening to, you know, a broadcast in my life, I don't think. They were talking about pre-diluvian plasma bridges between us and Saturn. I mean, talk about woo on a Monday, ladies and gentlemen. It was so awesome. Oh my gosh. So you guys have to go back and listen to the entire 3 hour show last night because it was just absolutely fantastic. Huh, that was good. I'm still totally pumped from it. I mean, it was that good, ladies and gentlemen. So, man, so much good stuff happening at the network lately. I just have to tell you how much I enjoy being here, part of this crew on Truth Frequency, and it's totally turned me into a talk radio addict. A lot of people probably don't know this about me, but I never listen to talk radio, never listen to anybody else's shows. I'm one of these people that believe you are what you eat, and I don't think I don't know. I don't want to have somebody else's impressions in my mind when I come here and try and do what it is that I do, which is, you know, whatever it is that I do. So I haven't really, you know, been in the habit of listening to anybody else. And now it seems like I'm tuned in all freaking day long because Robert Bruce's show is fantastic. Joe's show is obviously terrific. Popeye's show is fantastic. Aaron and Mel worth listening to. I really like Phoenix Rising Radio too. I'll tell you, I really like the fact that his replays play right before my show starts, which means I get to listen to his stuff. I don't have to stay up super duper late because it seems like I'm always on the computer. But I get to listen to his stuff before I get into doing my show. So it's just a nice situation here. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Oh, and Roger Sales show too. Holy cow. How could I forget Roger's show right after mine? Just so much good stuff going on here last night. It was absolutely crazy. Yeah. And I'm getting some more feedback in the chat room last night. People saying that Kev's show last night was just terrific. And I like saying all this stuff before he gets in the chat room because then he doesn't know I'm talking about him. And, cause that's the proper way to do this, ladies and gentlemen, as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, it is Tuesday. It's, Monday's ugly little sister. We have a lot of news to cover today. I really want to recommend you guys get into the chat room right now because we've got a pretty amazing guest on today. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is going to be joining us here in about an hour. We've got a pretty big issue that we all need to get in front of right now. Starting tomorrow in California, a very, 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 very important bill is going to start working its way through the legislature. And essentially, this bill is going to completely eliminate any type of personal or religious exemption to vaccines. Yes, you're hearing me correctly. They are trying to get this going in California. The first real gauntlet gets thrown down tomorrow. So we're going to be talking, obviously, Dr. Tenpenny is an international troublemaker and an international expert on natural health and has a really big focus on vaccines, vaccine damage, things like that, how we can mitigate it. And so I know a lot of you guys last time had a lot of great questions And in the same vein, I would hope that you guys could steward some of those into the chat room a little bit later when she comes on to the program. So definitely looking forward to that. Just giving you guys a heads up too, L.A. Marzulli will be joining us tomorrow. We'll be talking about Nephilim and elongated skulls, and I'm definitely going to pick his brain about CERN and some of the occult stuff, because I think that guy knows more than he lets on. I'm just saying. Kenneth Shortgen Jr. will be joining us on Thursday. He's from the Daily Economist. Obviously, oh my gosh, so much happening in the economy right now. All eyes on Greece. I've got a lot of stories to cover when I try and get over into the economic news today. So a lot of good stuff there. I love L.A. too, Red Inky. One of our good friends in the chat room, ladies and gentlemen, piping in early this morning. Happy to see all you guys there. That's pretty much everything I got on my morning rant here, guys. So, again, please go check out the big 3-hour show that was on last night. It was astounding. If somebody has a link to Kev's show, I think they already threw it up in the chat room, but toss that thing in there again. Cause man, I'll tell you what, I'm going to listen to the last hour again tonight cause I missed some of it and it was good stuff. Okay. Hopping into the news. New listeners out there, just so you guys know, the first hour of the show, we always go over all the pertinent news from around the world, so that's what we're going to start doing with right now. News out of Poland right now. Poland is expected to be building watchtowers. They plan on building 6 of these very large watchtowers along the border with Kaliningrad. So this move comes after Moscow says it's going to place state-of-the-art Iskander missiles in the Russian enclave in the area there. So the Polish news agency, again, PAP, they said this yesterday. They were citing a spokeswoman for border guards, and Alexandra Witz is her name. And she was saying that 6 such towers will be built along the 200-kilometer, 125-mile border between Poland and Kaliningrad. And the move obviously coming as there are still heightened tensions between Russia and the West over the Ukraine conflict. You know, we had this story the other day about the United States gifting an entire, I think it was an entire contingency's worth of, you know, armored vehicles and things to Poland. And then Poland was supposed to be using those vehicles to do some advising down in the Ukraine. So again, it's a proxy war and we are fighting it, ladies and gentlemen. But again, Poland planning on building some watchtowers along the border with Russia. So, hardening the defenses there, I suppose. Moving on to, back into the Middle East right now, more than a dozen people reportedly killed and several others wounded in a fresh wave of Saudi air attacks in Yemen. And the strike also targeted humanitarian aid convoys. This is a bad deal. Press TV reported that witnesses said Saudi fighter jets on Sunday fired several missiles on 2 aid trucks that were heading towards the southeastern city of Taiz to distribute humanitarian supplies among the crisis-stricken people. And Yemen's Al-Mazira satellite TV reported this again just yesterday. 3 people lost their lives, 9 others wounded in the attack, according to the report. And separately, more than 24 people were killed after Saudi warplanes bombarded a base run by Ansarullah fighters in a region situated between the southern Yemeni provinces of Abyan and Al-Biyada late on Saturday, according to a report published in the Yemen-based Arabic language Watan News Agency. The report also added that 21 Ansarullah revolutionaries, as well as 3 civilians, lost their lives in the airborne raid, and the extent of the material damage caused by the strike not immediately available right now. Saudi warplanes also struck another region situated between Al-Baidya and Shabwa provinces, and there were no immediate reports on possible casualties in that one. And in a third development, 20 Ansarullah fighters were killed when militants loyal to Yemen's fugitive president, Hadi, launched a surprise attack on them in the town of Al-Dali, situated about 183 miles south of Sana'a. So again, war. You said that exactly right there, Wood, and in the chat room. War, and more war. That's what's happening in Yemen. That situation's still escalating, and we are still part of it, ladies and gentlemen. And by we, of course, I mean the United States. I'm not trying to pigeonhole any of my UK listeners, because I don't know if you guys are providing coalition support against, you know, the Houthi rebels in Yemen, but kind of went through the background on those guys yesterday. It's a lot different than the mainstream media would paint the picture as. They really want to classify those guys as some sort of Iranian proxy, and we kind of tried to clear that up for some of you guys yesterday. Jumping over to Russia right now, Russia's top law enforcement agency has launched a criminal case against 11 U.S. DEA officers alleging that they are complicit in a sting operation that ended in the detention and trial of Russian citizen Konstantin Yaroshenko. The investigation committee, which is a special agency for serious and high-profile crimes, reported on Monday that its branch in South Russia's Rostov region has launched now a criminal case against 11 different citizens, U.S., and 4 Liberian citizens over charges of kidnapping with use of violence, or threats of violence. And additional charges include forcing a person to testify in a criminal process using intimidation or torture. Kind of unusual. Again, this is Russia accusing the CIA now of using intimidation or torture. And that obviously flies in the face of what most people would want us to believe about Russia. So in Russia, these crimes are punished with a prison sentence of up to 12 and 8 years respectively. So a U.S. court sentenced Konstantin Yaroshenko to 20 years back in 2011 for allegedly participating in a conspiracy to smuggle drugs to the United States. He was arrested in Liberia following a sting operation and handed over to the U.S. despite protests from Russia and violations of diplomatic code. And the pilot himself has always maintained his innocence, saying his poor command of English prevented him from understanding the nature of suggestions leveled at him by undercover DEA agents. So Yaroshenko and his relatives have repeatedly maintained the whole scheme was organized by the U.S. Special Services in an attempt to extract evidence against Viktor Bout, who is another Russian citizen illegally extradited to the U.S. and sentenced after another sting operation. The Russian diplomats have repeatedly criticized the arrests and trials of both Yaroshenko and Bout, and they say it's an example of biased U.S. justice based on fabricated charges. Where in the world would they ever pull something like that out? I mean, come on, CIA fabricating charges, please. As if that could ever happen, right? Come on. So anyway, in 2014, the Russian Foreign Ministry issued an official warning to all citizens who travel abroad, especially to countries that have extradition agreements with the United States, saying that the U.S. administration makes a routine practice of hunting for Russian citizens in third countries with subsequent extradition and conviction in the United States, usually over dubious charges. This, again, was the statement put out by the Russian Foreign Ministry. So again, 11 CIA agents being indicted there in Russia for essentially torture. Can't even believe it. It's hard to believe. This is an interesting story. I think you guys might like this. I was going to call Chris and talk to him about this because this is totally right up his alley. But this story comes out of Brazil, and I really found this to be really interesting. In Brazil, criminal offenders are getting a chance to tune in, turn on, and drop out of prison, that is. Okay, for the last 2 years, people convicted of violent crimes have been permitted to participate, listen to this, in ayahuasca ceremonies at a retreat deep in the Brazilian Amazon. Research is growing on the therapeutic properties of ayahuasca, which can help people recover from PTSD, addiction, depression, and other afflictions. Now the ego-busting properties of the sacred psychedelic drink are helping perpetrators of violent acts get back on the right track as well. And a New York Times story this week described participants decked out in white, drinking the potent brew, singing hymns, dancing, and struggling towards spiritual enlightenment. One of them, who is in prison for homicide, said, "I'm finally realizing I was on the wrong path, and each experience has helped me communicate with my victims to beg for forgiveness." This is pretty deep stuff here. I mean, they're giving convicted, you know, really hardcore criminals in Brazil ayahuasca treatments right now. I mean, this is pretty wild stuff here. And the program began when a prisoner rights group said that it already offered yoga, meditation, and Reiki decided to start ayahuasca ceremonies as well. Participants also learned technical job skills and even work in a garden to grow the very plants from which the ayahuasca drink is derived. And a psychologist with the program said it is designed to reveal inmates as human beings with the capacity to change. Boy, that's a crazy enough idea that it just might work, huh? I mean, imagine that. Imagine if we actually tried to rehabilitate people in prison. That's just unreal that they're doing this. I'll continue. The ayahuasca program serves a dual purpose. Prison populations in Brazil have doubled since 2000, and conditions are grossly overcrowded. So the retreats are kind of a pilot to try and reduce recidivism. For now, it's just a few inmates participating, and it's too early to tell whether the treatments will stop them from re-entering into the criminal justice system, but at least it is a starting point. In the United States, psychedelic pioneer Timothy Leary led research on giving psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, to inmates in the early 1960s in what was known as Concord Prison Experiments, right? And the research initially seemed to show promise in reducing recidivism. But Leary's results and methodology were subsequently questioned. Psilocybin was banned by the U.S. government in 1966, so follow-up research has been pretty scant. However, a study published last year by the Journal of Pharmacology by researchers from the University of Alabama at Birmingham and John Hopkins University School of Medicine produced more hope. The study looked at 25,000 people under community corrections supervision for substance abuse, and they found that those who used psychedelics were more likely to comply with their legal supervision requirements, including abstaining from alcohol and other drugs. So, and just putting it out there, in the United States, we incarcerate more people than any other nation in the world, both in gross totals and in percentage of the population. The U.S. actually holds 25% of the world's prisoners, with just 5% of the world's population. And since ayahuasca and other psychedelic substances are strictly prohibited by the federal government, stigmatized in mainstream discourse, and it stretches the suspension of disbelief to imagine the country implementing a program similar to the inmates' retreats in Brazil. However, if the experiment proves successful and ongoing research continues to show other benefits of psychedelics, maybe someday substance-aided consciousness expansion will have a role to play in prison reform efforts here in the United States as well. I love this. I think that's a fantastic story, and why not? Why not give these people an opportunity? Okay, gotta talk about this just a little bit too. Every year, this is another global story that kind of shook my cage here a little bit yesterday. About 1.3 billion with a B tons of food are wasted, according to the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. These economic crises coupled with a growing global population means each of us needs to play our part in reducing waste. I won't say election would, thank you. Approximately one-third of the global food production goes to waste. Most of this waste actually happens before the food even gets to consumers. 27% is lost at the processing and packaging stage, 26% during agricultural production, 17% during distribution, and 4% after produce has been purchased by consumers. A well-known supermarket chain in the UK reportedly threw away almost 30,000 tons of food in a six-month period last year, while the UK public discards an estimated 15 million tons of food annually. And in 2013, the UN Environment Program, or UNEP, launched a program to educate and advise the public about food choices, particularly highlighting the unnecessary wastage. Think, eat, save, reduce your footprint, ladies and gentlemen. Did I do it? I don't know. Urban foragers. I wanted to just bring this up. This is why I liked this article, because it was talking about urban foragers. I've got a friend of mine, what's his name? Now I can't think of it. I just had it in the tip of my head. He's a friend of mine that I've had intermittent in my life for a long, long time, but he's on Facebook all the time. And this guy dumpster dives. I'm telling you, the pictures that he puts of the food that he pulls out of dumpsters. Now, he lives in California, so he goes to all of the grocery stores and does this. And he's not a poor guy. He just doesn't believe that people should be throwing stuff away. And, really has no qualms about just hopping into a store dumpster and pulling stuff out. And some of the things that we throw away, even from a grocery store level, are mind-blowing. But we need to all start thinking a little bit more about the things that we are the things that we're throwing away every day. I mean, you can cut the bad portions of your fruit off, right? You can put that stuff into your compost bin. The big deal is that most of this crap ends up in landfills, which is where we get all this methane from, because all of this stuff is decomposing. Be more frugal with what you're using. Try not to, make your portions smaller. Try and start thinking about growing your own food. Exactly, Wood. Got that one on the button. I'm hoping, and I don't put this in stone yet, don't get the chisels out, but I'm hoping to have Joel Karsten on next week. Joel Karsten wrote a book about straw bale gardens. He is like the definitive guy on straw bale gardens. I know you guys know I love straw bale gardens because lazy. That's why. And they work really, really well. So again, I'm hoping that Joel, I can get him on the program next week, because it is about the right time to start conditioning your bales, ladies and gentlemen. So again, growing your own food is the answer here. We need to reduce waste. We need to start trying to live more locally. And, this global food waste thing affects everybody right now. And it's what's astounding to me is that it really draws into focus the fact that there is not a food shortage. There is a money shortage. And if money is fake, then why are we not feeding the world? There was a grocery store, I think in Canada, that just started selling ugly fruits and ugly vegetables, and they're making a killing right now. And I think that's what we need to do, is put that choice back to the consumers. But again, Wood hits the nail on the head here in the chat room, say grow your own food. Grow your own food, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I would recommend too. How about a goofy story from Air India? Anybody traveling through India recently? You might want to, soon, I guess. You might want to hear this. Hey, yeah, Kev Baker's in the chat room, ladies and gentlemen. Kev, your ears must have been burning, because we were talking about your show last night a lot. Awesome stuff, by the way. Okay, let's talk about what's going on here in India very quickly. In a major drama on an Air India flight, AL-611, a fist fight between the flight's captain and a co-pilot sent passengers in panic on Sunday in Jaipur, right? According to reports, some fistfight between two employees was witnessed by the passengers traveling on the flight, and eyewitnesses revealed that the commander asked the co-pilot to take down the critical takeoff figures, and however, the co-pilot took offense to this and reportedly beat up the captain. So the takeoff figures, I guess, involve writing all the critical facts, like the number of passengers on board, the takeoff weight and fuel, all that kind of stuff, and it's usually displayed on a little card in front of the pilots for the entire duration of the flight. Well, apparently the pilot didn't really particularly want to see it, so he asked the co-pilot to take it down. Co-pilot didn't take kindly to that, so he beat him up. And apparently this was also not the first time that this particular co-pilot in question has faced similar charges. He was actually charged for a similar incident 3 years ago when he had asked the commander of a flight to come out of the cockpit, and then he, in a daring attempt, removed the stars from his commander's shirt collar and then tried to beat him up in the aisle there. Oh, and then a year later, another commander complained about his behavior and questioned the state of his mind. Although Air India spokesman, they came out yesterday, issued a statement, says everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Go on back to your business, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah, Air India, maybe a flight to avoid, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. Okay, let's hop away from the international news. I got to get some stuff into the national news right now because we're moving forward here. Closing arguments began in the case of the Boston Marathon bomber Sarnev yesterday, as Sarnev's lawyers made one last attempt to spare him from the death penalty. Sarnev and his brother Tamerlan are accused of killing three and injuring hundreds using two pressure cooker bombs during the Boston Marathon back in 2013, April 15th. And Tamerlan later died in a shootout with the Boston police. And according to Judy Clark, she has admitted that the then 19-year-old helped commit the bombings during her opening statement. She, of course, is the defense attorney. It's really not a good idea for the defense attorney to come out and say, yeah, he did all this stuff. That's usually right there. Usually, you know, you don't have the right defense attorney because he's pled not guilty. He's facing 30 charges right now, 30 charges, 17 of them carry the death penalty right now. So again, deliberations are set to probably start today. I'm not sure if they actually finished up all the closing statements yesterday, but I believe that after the closing statements, they're going to be deliberating, and we don't know exactly how long, but apparently they're going to have to go through all 30 of these charges and come to a unanimous decision on all of them before they can get into the actual sentencing phase. So we'll see what's going on there with that. You know, a lot of people still believe that was a false flag situation. Obviously the response from the Boston Police Department was unacceptable, but people there in Massachusetts just kind of don't really care, I guess. But we'll keep you guys up to date as that thing continues to move forward. I liked this story also, although the follow-up update kind of bummed me out a little bit. City workers were sent to remove a large bronze bust of NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden after it was placed on a war memorial in Brooklyn Park Monday evening. And the word Snowden attached to the bottom of the statue at the Prison Ship Martyrs Monument at Fort Greene Park, the Parks Department crews removed the bust Monday afternoon. Animal New York reports that three artists installed a 4-foot, 100-pound sculpture before dawn, fusing the figure to the stone monument with an adhesive. The website, which recorded the installation of the bust, says that the adhesive would not damage the original statue. Video of the installation shows several people in construction gear carting the bust to the park and then using a scaffold to hoist it to the top of the statue. And the group of artists told Animal that the bust actually costs thousands of dollars to make, and that they have made a mold so they can create more Snowden effigies as soon as the one in the park is removed. Which, again, just putting it back out there, it was removed yesterday, so hopefully they'll get another one up. I like getting a monument to Snowden up. I think that's a good thing. I don't know if you saw also, on a related Snowden note, that HBO comedian John Oliver traveled to Russia and actually spoke with former NSA contractor Edward Snowden last week in a wide-ranging interview that touched on the Patriot Act's upcoming expiration date, his vindication in releasing the NSA documents, and even took a comical look at the government's access to Americans' naked selfie pictures. Yes, yeah, so the primary focus of Oliver's criticism is that the Patriot Act, specifically the controversial Section 215, is set to expire on June 1st unless the government reauthorizes the mass surveillance collection program. And looking to bring attention to the NSA's intrusive technology, the comedian spent 48 paranoid hours in Moscow to do the half-humorous, half-serious interview with the most famous hero and or traitor in recent American history, who leaked a trove of documents about the U.S. government's surveillance programs to journalists in 2013. Oliver asked him if he missed home. Snowden said that my country is something that travels with me. I do miss my country. I do miss my home, and I I do miss my family. Snowden also said that the U.S. was spying on anybody that they could remotely link to terrorist activities, and in a majority of cases also no connections whatsoever. So Snowden said he felt it was his duty to let the American people decide if this is the government that they want. He quotes the NSA saying, we have the greatest NSA surveillance capabilities that we have ever seen in history. And now what they'll argue is that they don't use this for nefarious purposes against American citizens. And in some ways that's true. But the real problem is that they're using these capabilities to make us vulnerable to them and then saying, well, I have a gun pointed at your head and I'm not going to pull the trigger. You can trust me. Snowden also warned that while some NSA programs were helpful to the country's intelligence officials, spying had started coming against American citizens themselves in wide-ranging domestic surveillance. And Snowden says he understands that he leaked top-secret information, but he trusts the journalists that it was given to, and he felt like it was he felt like he needed to take the risk on behalf of the American civil liberties being undermined by their own government. In a comical aside, this is the part that I really enjoyed. In a comical aside during the interview, Oliver asked Snowden to make the issues connect with Americans by bringing up whether or not the government is analyzing people's pictures of their naked selves. We'll say that. They're you know, naked selfies. And so Snowden responded. He says, if you have an email somewhere like Gmail hosted on a server overseas or transferred overseas, if it at any time crosses outside of the borders of the United States, your junk ends up in the database. Even if you send it to somebody in the United States and it's a wholly domestic communication between you and your wife, that can go to New York and to London and then come back and get caught up in this database. He says the good news is there's no program called, you know, the American junk file or whatever. But the bad news is that they still are collecting all of your information, including your pictures of your junk. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, from the mouth of Edward Snowden. Not an official policy to collect pictures of yourself naked if you're sending them to your loved ones or whatever, but still getting caught up in the dragnet. So there you go. There you go. Guys in the chat room, crack me up. Oh, man, we got snuck up on by the break. We have got to go do this quick 3-minute break. We're going to come back. We got a lot more news. We got some really important economic news coming out of Greece right now, and a little cool science and tech stuff too. Also, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny will be joining us in about a half an hour. So keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. We will see you in just a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. Thank you guys also, all of you in the chat room, big numbers in there today. Appreciate you guys being in there. I hope you guys are getting your thinking caps on because Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is going to be joining us in about a half an hour. We're going to be talking about vaccines. I see Kev Baker in there laughing about measles right now. I'm scared of measles. I don't even leave the house anymore because I don't want to die from the measles. And you can die from the measles. Oh, no, never mind. Okay, anyway, so get your questions ready for Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. This is going to be a great show. I can absolutely assure you guys of that. Appreciate you guys all joining us this morning. Let's get back into the national news right now. We've been talking quite a bit about California. I do have a health story that we need to cover from California, but I'm going to save that for a little bit later in the show. Obviously, it'll be something that we want to talk about with Dr. Tenpenny. But getting on to California's water issues right now, Governor Brown came out and clarified a couple of things yesterday. Again, mentioning the fact that this executive order is done under emergency power. He says it does have the force of law, which is pretty unusual. It's requiring action, then changing the behavior of every single person from the Oregon border all the way to the Mexican border. And it affects lawns, it affects people's lives, how long they stay in the shower, and how businesses use water. So Brown went on to elaborate on how they were planning on enforcing this order, and he's not a very clear person, so I'm going to try and clear this up. But they're essentially, they have state water boards, and they have hundreds of them. Each water district actually has its own board, and that is who is going to be responsible for monitoring the people's water consumption. And he also says that if people do not comply to the standards that these new standards that he's basically putting out, could result in a $500 a day fine. $500 a day fine. So again, he says in a drought of this magnitude, you have to change the behavior and you have to change it substantially. Now, one of the other people who was there present pointed out that more water is used for almond production than is used by all the residents and businesses of San Francisco and Los Angeles combined. Brown countered that by saying, you know, the farm workers who are at the very low end of the economic scale here in California are basically out of work right now. And there are people in the agricultural areas who are suffering, and those people are supposed to be tasked with providing food for everyone. They're not watering their lawns or taking long showers. They're providing most of the fruits and vegetables for America and a significant part of the world. So he's, again, really making it very clear that industry is not going to be suffering in California, right? It's going to be the people there that are carrying the burden of this orchestrated drought. I don't know what else to call it. There's obviously an orchestrated drought going on in California. If we could make it rain an inch a day, or an inch an hour on the Ho Chi Minh Trail back in the day, there's no reason that we couldn't bring water to California right now with the capabilities that we've got to steer weather, not to mention the fact that they could do desalination plants or perhaps drill for primary water, as Deborah Tavares suggests. So again, the noose is tightening around the state of California, and I'm really starting to wonder when we're going to start seeing a pretty major exodus. I imagine people are going to be moving to Oregon. I imagine people will be moving to Washington. There's a lot of area up there, lots of good farmland, things like that. So again, interesting stuff going on there in California. Also, I got to give some major props to Kansas right now. Holy cow. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback signed a constitutional carry bill into law starting July 1st. And this law legalizes concealed carry of firearms by law-abiding individuals 21 or over, whether or not they have obtained a permit. Effectively, this law lifts the pricey permit requirement that previously prevented. Why would somebody put that many P's into a sentence if you're writing an article? Just saying. The law lifts the pricey permit requirements that previously prevented some Kansans from lawfully exercising their constitutional rights to bear arms in self-defense. According to the Kansas Star, Governor Brownback said, "We are saying that if you want to carry a concealed firearm in the state, then you do not have to get a permission slip from the government. It is a constitutional right, and we are removing the barrier to that right." Ah, it's always the states right next to mine that pull their heads out of their behinds before mine does. I don't know what the heck that's about, but man, gotta give some major profit or props to Kansas getting in on this. So the state will continue to provide concealed carry permits for those who are interested in obtaining one in order to carry concealed firearms in one of the other 36 states that does grant reciprocity to Kansas's permits. But the above, and Kansas businesses obviously still retain the right to post signs prohibiting the concealed carry of firearms on their property. But this is a huge deal. I really like this. And, you know, I wanted to take a little second out here and segue because there was an argument that came up, and I wanted to say it happened last year. People were starting to argue about, well, the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment actually outlines two rights that you have, not just to keep arms. There's another word in there a lot of people don't ever focus on, and that is to bear arms. What does that mean? A lot of people were really confused last year when there was a big discussion about that. What does that mean to bear arms? And is that a distinct and separate right from your ability to keep arms, say, in your home? And I think that it is a significant difference because, to me, if I've got a dog in my neighborhood and he's, you know, he's cornered or scared or whatever, and I'm trying to go and help him, but he's threatened, what is that dog going to do, right? What's a dog going to do? He's going to growl. And he's going to bare his teeth, right? He's going to take a posture that tells me very distinctly that I probably ought to, you know, mind the line in the sand here, right? And that's a portion of the Second Amendment that nobody ever talks about. You know, they're saying, oh, you have the right to either have a weapon or not. It's not even about having a weapon. It's also about standing on your front lawn in an aggressive posture that says to any tyrannical person or agent of the government that if you cross this line, you're going to have a problem. And that's your right under God to be able to show that you have the ability to use force. And I'm not saying that I want you people out there threatening people or whatever, but you have the right to take an aggressive posture if somebody is coming after you. That's essentially part of the rights in the way I take it from the Second Amendment. And I think that that's just something, I just wanted to point that out because I think that's important that people understand that, it's not just about keeping the weapons. It's also about being able to take an assertive, aggressive posture and say, this is where the line is here, people. And if you cross it, you're going to have a problem. So there you go. Okay. Speaking of, I did not mean to segue from that into this story. I apologize. This wasn't planned, but a new report from Think Progress unearthed some pretty disturbing figures when it came to the number of police-related deaths that occurred in America in the month of March alone. Just last month, in the 31 days of March, police in the United States killed more people than the UK did in the entire 20th century. In fact, it was twice as many people. Police in the UK have only killed 52 people in the last 100 years. According to this report from Think Progress, in March alone, 111 people died during police encounters, 36 more than in February. And in the past, numerous incidents were spurred by violent threats from suspects. And two officers were shot in Ferguson during a peaceful protest. However, the deaths follow a national pattern, right? Subjects were mostly people of color, mentally ill, or both. So this high number of murders in March increased the average for police killings from one every 8.5 hours to one every 6.5 hours. One police killing every 6.5 hours here in the United States, ladies and gentlemen. That's pretty staggering numbers. That's a pretty serious problem. We need to have a national dialogue about whether or not this is what we want from law enforcement. It's not about whether or not law enforcement officers are doing their job. They are doing their job, ladies and gentlemen. That's the history of law enforcement, is to protect infrastructure. That's their job. They are agents of a corporation. The question isn't whether or not they're doing their job correctly. It's whether or not their job is necessary. Do we need infrastructure protection, or could we roll that into potentially heavily supervised voluntary peace officers, just like the half of the fire departments across the country, voluntary fire department, right? We could do the same thing with law enforcement officer and take away the power from these people to kill people in the streets, because that's what's going on right now. Anyway, let's compare some numbers here really quick. Looking north to Canada, total number of citizens killed by law enforcement officers in 2014 was 14. That's 78 fewer than in the United States. And from 2010 to 2014, there were 4 fatal police shootings in England, which has the population of about 52 million people. By contrast, Albuquerque, New Mexico, with a population about 1% the size of England's, has had 26 fatal police shootings in that same period. China, whose population is 4.5 times that of the United States, recorded 12. That's a 1 with a 2 following it, 12 killings by law enforcement officers in 2014. On average, U.S. police officers kill people at a rate 70 times higher than any other first world countries as they protect and serve the American citizens. Oh, I love the land of the free, don't you guys? It's just so great. Remember, you need a license to cut hair in this country. Land of the free, yeah, good times. I'm going to skip that because I don't care. And what else is going on? Oh, yeah, since we're talking about police officers, and again, didn't mean to make all this happen. I don't know if you guys saw that video that came out a couple of weeks ago of the Fort Lauderdale police officer who was threatening and then ended up slapping a homeless man at a central bus terminal. Did you guys see that video? It was pretty ridiculous. Anyway, the Broward County State Attorney's Office filed 3 misdemeanor charges over Victor Ramirez, who is 34, including 2 counts of battery and 1 count of falsifying records on Thursday. So again, the police officer who has now been indicted for basically striking a homeless man for no reason on video is going to be indicted and hopefully will do some jail time. Hopefully won't be on law enforcement anymore. That would be fine with me. Guys, bear with me for just 1 quick second. I'm going to do a quick musical interlude because for some reason, nope, I'm not. Okay, never mind. We had somebody knocking on the door here for a second. I need to get a sign up that says don't knock on my door when I'm live on the air, because that would be helpful. Okay, moving on to the economy right now. Lots of stuff going on in the world. Panic buying seems to be affecting the markets right now. Let's see. We are at 17,962.5 on the Dow. Bear with me here just a second, guys. The person is not going to be taking no for an answer here. So give me just a quick second. We'll see if we can't get some sort of musical interlude here for you guys. It probably won't take too long. It might take a second, though. Hopefully they're not going to be there very long. Good stuff. Live radio, huh? Love you guys. Appreciate you guys being patient out there. Let's see if I can find, let's do that one. Because I got to go answer this door for some reason because they're being very adamant. So let me get this thing going. And we're going to listen to, since we've had a lot of 9/11 discussions here, I'm going to play this little Corbett 9/11 thing because I think you guys might like this. So give me just a second here and we'll get this thing rocking and rolling. Bear with me, guys. I'll be back in a flash.
On the morning of September 11th, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat trained pilots on 4 commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down 3 buildings with 2 planes in New York. While in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10th, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, P-TECH, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victim's family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes in the buildings.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO. The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide. This man never existed, nor is anything he had to say worthy of your attention, and if you say otherwise, you are a paranoid conspiracy theorist and deserve to be shunned by all of humanity. Likewise him, 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 and her. And her, and her, and him. Osama bin Laden lived in a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, but somehow got away. Then he was hiding out in Tora Bora, but somehow got away. Then he lived in Abbottabad for years, taunting the most comprehensive intelligence dragnet employing the most sophisticated technology in the history of the world for a decade, releasing video after video with complete impunity and getting younger and younger as he did so, before finally being found in a daring SEAL team raid which wasn't recorded on video, in which he didn't resist or use his wife as a human shield, and in which these crack special forces operatives panicked and killed this unarmed man, supposedly the best source of intelligence about those dastardly terrorists on the entire planet. Then they dumped his body in the ocean before telling anyone about it. Then a couple dozen of that team's members died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. This is the story of 9/11, brought to you by the media which told you the hard truths about
his head could be seen to move violently forward.
And
they took the babies out of incubators.
And
mobile production facilities.
And
the rescue of Jessica Lynch.
If you have any questions about this story, you are a batshit, paranoid, tinfoil, dog-abusing baby hater and will be reviled by everyone. If you love your country and or freedom, happiness, rainbows, rock and roll, puppy dogs, apple pie, and your grandma, you will never ever express doubts about any part of this story to anyone. Ever. This has been a public service announcement by the friends of the FBI, CIA, NSA, DIA, SEC, MSM, White House, NIST, and the 9/11 Commission. Because ignorance is strength.
Wow, I'm sorry to have to drop a segue in there like that, guys, but sometimes craziness happens on live radio. But man, I love James Corbett. I'm really bummed out. I'm not really bummed out, but it's unfortunate that our show happens when it happens because, you know, we are live and James Corbett lives in Japan and it's just way too, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning for him. And I don't have the heart to make the guy stay up super late, even though he's one of my very favorite people out there. And man, if you haven't seen that video, that's called 9/11 in a nutshell. You can go check it out on YouTube. Totally worth your time. Totally worth your time. Anyway, I apologize about having to run to the door there. I'll just lay it out. I have a roommate and he doesn't live here anymore. He lives with his new girlfriend, has for a long time, which is nice because all his stuff is here, furniture and stuff. It's great. But he also has a totally crazy ex-girlfriend and she was not having no for an answer and was banging on the door. I don't know if it was a walk of shame kind of thing going on. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, that's what happened. It happens. There you go. That's what happened. So anyway, let's get back into the news real quick because we're running out of time. And again, I apologize for having to take the unexpected break. And, there you go. That's what's going on. Okay, anyway, the Dow is up 85 points today, as we mentioned a little while ago. S&P is up also just a touch today at 2,080. The dollar index has come up almost a full percent today, but we're still at about 98 cents. It looks like the euro has dropped about the same amount. We're at 108.43. And let's see what's going on with silver. Has taken a little bit of a dip from yesterday. It was a pretty big buying frenzy yesterday. We talked about silver and gold both being up about 4% yesterday. Silver being up about 4%, and I think gold was up about $20 yesterday. But anyway, gold has taken a little bit of a step back today. We're still above 1,200 at 1,211, and $16.83 big pennies will get you a bright, shiny ounce of silver. Crude oil is up this morning, most likely because of war in Yemen, if I had to take a wild guess at that. So crude oil climbing up about 2% today, $53.21. And we'll check out what the Bitcoin is doing. Solidly at 250 right now. Solidly at 250. I did at least live to tell the tale. That's correct, PCR. That's funny. PRC. Okay, so that's everything that's going on in the big picture, at least in the American markets right now. We've got some stuff to talk about with Greece here right now. So the Greek finance minister, Varoufakis, has unveiled his plan on reviving the Greek economy. And this is like the third time that we've talked about this in the last couple of days, and the plan continues to be changing. I'm not sure if this is going to go down by this week or not. Remember, there's a really important date coming up here later in this week where essentially Greece has got to pay back the IMF a pretty large amount. So Greece requires a new payment with Europe to make its 324 billion euro debt sustainable, as now it accounts for about 178% of its GDP. And Varoufakis pointed out five terms on which the plan is expected to work out. He says, first, it is a reasonable level of primary budget surplus at about 1.5% of GDP instead of 4.5% agreed on by the previous government, which is what led to the severe recession. Secondly, it is a reasonable debt restructuring that will link payments with the growth rate of nominal GDP. In addition, Greece needs an investment package from the European Investment Bank and the European Investment Fund, which should be placed mainly in the private sector in accordance with the new non-bureaucratic procedures. Fourth, Greece should pass on effective restructuring of troubled loans by allocating them to a bad bank. Where have we seen this before? This is what Austria did a couple of years ago, and Austria's bad bank just collapsed, 6 weeks ago or so? So again, Greece is kind of following, you know, it's all the same moves. You know, we've already seen all this played out once before. Greece, they're hoping that they're going to meet this preliminary agreement with the creditor countries, and they're trying to get it done by the 24th of April. But on April 9th, it's expected now, they're saying that they are going to be able to pay the $450 million tranche of the IMF. That they basically are going to be able to do this on the 9th. It still remains to be seen whether or not both Lagarde and Varoufakis agreed that the uncertainty about Greece's ability to repay its debts is not really in the interest of Athens. And earlier there were fears that Greece would not be able to even meet the next $450 million payment to the IMF loan. So again, that IMF repayment is supposed to happen on the 9th, and they have been really back and forth all weekend. Deciding whether or not they're going to be able to do this or not. So I don't know what's going to happen with Greece right now, but we are kind of coming down to the wire. Meanwhile, Russia is kind of positioning themselves to take advantage of anything that's going on in Greece. So while Greece spent Easter weekend assuring the IMF, the institution, not the critical third member of the Troika that shall not be named, that the 550 million euro payment due to Christine Lagarde's institution will be made despite Greece's officially, rather than just unofficially, running out of money and being forced to prioritize paying its creditors over paying wages and pensions. And its prime minister is currently evaluating if they're going to have to fall back on a plan B when he visits Vladimir Putin tomorrow, and one day ahead of the double Greek deadlines for the IMF payment. So again, just throwing this in the ring, the Alexis Tsipras is going to be visiting with Vladimir Putin tomorrow. So this, again, will be a day before this big payment is due to the IMF. So FT points out that while Alexis Tsipras visits Vladimir Putin's Kremlin on Wednesday, there is a chance that the Greek premier's Eastern maneuver will immediately bear fruit, kiwis, peaches, and strawberries to be precise. Athens is hopeful that Moscow will lift a retaliatory ban on Greek soft fruits to demonstrate the abiding strength of Russo-Greek relations, just as both leaders feel a diplomatic chill with Europe over the Ukraine crisis and Athens bailout sagas, respectively. So, of course, every Greek request for a concession quid will be met with a proportional Russian quo. And when it is this that worries the European diplomats. Namely, will the Putin-Cyprus glad-handing amount to something more significant than fruit trade? The big fear, in the words of one suspicious senior official, is that this is a Trojan horse plot where Russia extends billions in rescued loans in exchange for a Greek veto on sanctions, a move that would kill Western unity over the Ukraine. So no such shock is expected this week. However, Athens nears the brink of insolvency. There is growing alarm that Mr. Tsipras' radical left government might indeed turn to Moscow in desperation. It would set off the largest panic over Greece's strategic alignment since the 1947 U.S. Marshall Plan, initiated to save the country from communist fighters that Mr. Tsipras' party lionized to this day. Others are hoping that the Tsipras visit is merely as well an alternate Trojan horse straw man meant to instill fear in Europe that Russia can spread its tentacles into a country which is still a member of the Eurozone and is merely a ploy in bailout talks with Germany and the Eurozone. So again, both sides of the coin here. Either they're going to go fully on with Russia and that's going to be their bailout plan B, or the courting of Russia, which we're seeing going to start happening essentially tomorrow when Tsipras joins Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Is that courting itself just kind of a shot across the bow to the Troika and the EU and all that, saying, hey, you know, we've got some aces up our sleeve just in case you guys decide to, continue to screw us on austerity, things like that. So again, Moscow's still throwing its hat in the ring when it comes down to this Greece situation. It's very interesting stuff going on. Very interesting stuff. Okay, let's hop over into some science and tech stuff because I promised that I would. That's not the right thing. Here we go. Okay. Couple of interesting stories that I thought were worth mentioning on the air. Right now, everybody out there with a smartphone is capable of taking a 2D picture right today. But thanks to Caltech scientists, soon you will be able to wave your phone at an object and capture a 3D scan of it. You could potentially scan a nice coffee cup and then send the 3D scan to a 3D printer and produce an exact copy from your cell phone. This is a pretty big breakthrough in making a 3D scanner small enough to fit inside a phone. And existing systems are pretty large and bulky, but the Caltech team has developed a tiny silicon chip that containing a nanophotonic coherent imager, or an NCI, which uses an array of LIDAR sensors, which is sort of a laser-based radar, to determine the distance and the size of an object. So by measuring laser light reflected off of the object, and amazingly, all of this technology fits into a chip that's just a millimeter in size, making it easy to embed in devices like smartphones. So that is pretty cool. I think nano junk, I don't know where you're going with that, Wood. Pretty funny stuff, though. And also, monkeys are causing internet outages. It's a true story. You can apparently harden fiber optic internet cables against things like heat, ice, flooding, mold, and even crushing pressures. But apparently not monkeys. The company's the cable's freshly extruded plastic casing is too darn alluring to resist an exploratory chewing session. And the Indian government is learning this the hard way as it installs roughly 435,000 miles of fiber optic cable over the next few years. And according to Reuters, the modernization project has been especially tough in the holy city of Varanasi because the cables can't be buried there. So the workers laid them on the Ganges and a bunch of monkeys ate them. So they're having trouble with internet in India. We're caught up on a break here, guys. We're going to go to this break. We come back. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny will be with us. Keep it right here, guys. We'll see you in a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I know I miss you guys terribly when I'm not here with you. I have to tell you, full room in the chat room right now. Can't thank you guys enough for being in there. I hope you guys have some questions ready for our guest. First and foremost, I have to express my absolute gratitude and just overwhelming happiness for being able to bring back to the program Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. For those of you guys who are unfamiliar with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, we are going to sort all of that out today. She is a board-certified osteopathic medical doctor from Cleveland, Ohio. She's also the founder of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center. It's a clinic that specializes in holistic health and healing, including breast thermography, allergy relief, and bioidentical hormones. She is also an internationally known expert and troublemaker associated. She's very good. Her main focus, ladies and gentlemen, one of her main focuses is obviously vaccine safety, which is pretty much a misnomer these days. And she has done many educational DVDs. She's the author of 2 books, one of them is called Foul, which makes the connection between bird flu and environmental pollution, and also Saying No to Vaccines, which is a guide written to help adults and parents refute the most common reasons to vaccinate. And as the voice of reason about alternative medicine, Dr. Tenpenny is an outspoken advocate for free choice in healthcare, including the right to refuse vaccination. She's done hundreds of TV shows, many, many radio interviews, and she is one of my all-time favorite guests on our program, as well as a returning guest on Coast to Coast. I would highly recommend you guys check out drtenpenny.com. She also has a vaccine research library, which you can access at vaccineresearchlibrary.com. And we'll talk a little bit about another new website that is out that she wanted to draw some attention to called The Edgy Truth. But before we get into all that, first and foremost, let me welcome you to the program, Sherry. Thank you very much again for being with us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
It's always a pleasure and always lots of fun, JD. Thanks for having me on a regular basis here. This is really a good opportunity for me, and I enjoy your audience, and you're such a great host, and so it's just great all the way around.
I gotta stop you there, because I'm very susceptible to flattery, okay? So just, we gotta stop right there. Ladies and gentlemen, before we get into this interview today, we're gonna take a moment out, because I need to ask for some help, and I'm not asking for help for me. I want everybody to kind of take a moment here with me. Dr. Tenpenny has been dealing with a small infection underneath one of her teeth, and it is in the top right-hand side of her mouth, the second tooth from the back. And I would really appreciate all of you guys if we could just take a moment and ask the universe, the creator, whatever it is that you, you know, pray to send some positive healing vibes to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, because she is somebody that we do not want to lose. We want her around, and something like a little bit of a tooth issue can really escalate into something very serious, and I know she's been dealing with it for a while. And so I just want to take a moment and ask all of you, my favorite people in the world, the listeners here at the broadcast, to send as much positive energy, some healing vibes over to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, if you would. Just, let's just spend a few seconds doing that, ladies and gentlemen. So let's just count to five here, okay? Okay. Hopefully, Sherry, you will get some relief from whatever it is that's going on in your mouth, and I really hope that I hope that will help. I hope you can start feeling some love from the people out there. We're getting a lot of good love sent to you through the chat room right now. So,
thank you, JD. That was a really unexpected, and thank you, and appreciate it. And I'll just open myself up to whatever healing energies come in. I know you and I talked about this earlier today, and I've tried about every natural thing there is to do, and so the one thing I haven't done is specifically ask for help. You know, we who are healers, who are always giving, sometimes forget that people want to give back to us. And
that's
so
right.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Well, anything that I can do to help. I mean, honestly, we really respect all the work that you do out there, and we're, you know, the fact that you're in the world is so important to all of us, and we just, you know, we want to make sure that the love is going around to the right people and that the people are being affected by it. So getting a lot of unusual suggestions, people saying saltwater picks and water picks and things like that. I guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, she has tried everything and some things that I can't even imagine trying, to be perfectly honest. So I hope that it gets better for you. And again, we'll probably do the same call towards the end of the show before you have to break off to go to work. In the vein of the show today, though, we've got a pretty serious issue coming down the pike in California right now. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, we do. It's I've posted a couple of things on my Facebook page, which my Facebook page is Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines, or you can go to facebook.com/vaccineinfo, and it's the California alert, because tomorrow is D-Day for California, and SB 277 is wanting to take away parents' rights to refuse vaccines. California has always been one of the 19 states that have a philosophical exemption, which
right.
means you've looked at the risk of the vaccine versus the risk of the illness, and you say, there are many, many ways I can keep my children healthy. I do not want to take on the risk of the vaccine, and so therefore I philosophically oppose to these vaccines.
Yeah.
Well, after this crazy, maybe even staged measles outbreak that was a couple of months ago in Disney, 36 states, there were 110 bills introduced in 36 different states to take away parents' rights to vote. And several of the states have already withdrawn the bills. Washington, Oregon, North Carolina, have already taken their bills off the table because they know how ridiculous this is. But California, one of their main senators is a pediatrician, and he's actually been caught on film saying 2 years ago that the philosophical exemption should be the parents' rights, and now he is absolutely the biggest leader to taking away parents' rights, saying that you have no right to refuse under any circumstances, you must be fully vaccinated to go to both public school, private school, and to daycare and homeschooling, and it makes me wonder how much money got put into this guy's pocket that we don't know about
mm-hmm.
for him to be so forward on this.
And this Richard Pan, is that correct?
It is.
Just making, okay, let's get that name out there.
Get that name out there. California people need to make sure he is not reelected.
Yes.
And so they are having a big rally tomorrow from 10 to noon in Sacramento. And so anyone in California who can go to the rally, go there, let your voice be heard. It was actually one of the many reasons why that the bill was withdrawn in North Carolina, because of the large turnout of people that were there and very intelligently talking about the risks of the vaccines, the chemicals in the vaccines, the animal cells, the human DNA, and all these other things. And so the rally is there, and I just posted on my Facebook page all of the different senators that need to be called today. If you are in California, now that people from Missouri shouldn't be calling California senators, but if you're in California, call them. And what's particularly important is if you call a senator from your district, because you are a constituent, you are a voter for them, and you can say, I am a constituent, I'm going to be watching how you vote for the next time you run for election, and I want you to vote no on this bill. Thank you very much. And say it firmly and hang up.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. But if you really let them know that you are a constituent and you are putting them on notice that you are going to watch how they do this, because if they vote yes, then the next time they run, you can do whatever you can to get them to not be reelected.
That's right. I would even take it a step further. I would go into their office. I would go into their office. I would get a business card from every one of their little representative cronies in the office so that they know who you are. And then you tell them you're going to come back in 10 days and say, I want to know what your response is going to be to this. I mean, really put it in their court. Because that's the only way we're ever going to make a change is if people really, I think footsteps in the office, you know, boots on the ground, so to speak, I think is kind of the big time answer for diplomacy, don't you?
I'm totally in agreement with that, JD, totally. But some people just can't.
Yeah.
So if you can do boots on the ground, you can go in and there's, you can be in the face of these people. You can be direct, but you can still be polite. I mean, I think that sometimes people think being direct and being firm somehow makes you be rude. And it isn't. It's that you have passion about this, that you want to protect your children, you want to protect you, because everybody needs to know that this first round of taking away, they're pushing to see how far they can push us, how
right.
much can they get away with. It's always this slippery, slidey slope of how much do we, the electorate, we, the people, allow them to get away with.
Well, and I think that's the, I was just going to go to that exact point, is that, you know, this initiative in California is going to come in kind of under the radar, because we have a lot of parents out there that are older that don't have any idea the volume of vaccines that are required for kids. You've especially got a lot of adults out there who think this doesn't affect them at all. People without kids, you know, people who remember, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago when vaccines were ostensibly safe because you only had to get one or two, and now it's a lot different. So maybe we should talk about or direct some of this conversation to the people who may think that this isn't going to affect them at all, because again, this is just about children's vaccinations right now.
On February the 4th, there was a document that got released that from HHS, from the Department of Health and Human Services,
yes.
which is entitled the Adult Immunization Plan. They are concerned that so few adults are actually getting vaccines. In fact, I think that, you know, the highest it may be the flu shot, and that's around 47%. But the other shots that are currently available and they're wanting to push onto adults, they've got obviously the annual flu shot, there's the shingles shot, there's a pneumonia shot, and there are 141 in the pipeline targeted towards adolescents and adults. I previously had posted an article on my website that said that there were 300 vaccines in the developmental pipeline. Well, two parts to that. One, there are actually more than 300 because they didn't talk about the edible vaccines, which we'll come back to in a minute. But of those 300, I actually broke them down and went and looked and did tally marks analysis of looking at them. About 150 are cancer vaccines. So, of course, we won't all be targeted for that. It'll just be people with cancer. But some of those cancer vaccines are supposed to be preventive. Like they're trying to come up with a gene-modifying vaccine to modify genes so women won't get breast cancer. Now, can you imagine what that is going to be promoted as if they get that going? Everyone will get that. But what happens if that antibody makes a mistake and attaches to the wrong gene? You know, and then once that gene is turned off, what does that do to an entire cascade of other genes? And now you've got this antibody floating around and you've negated one gene. Well, it's got to go and possibly negate others. I mean, we are tinkering with danger here on these DNA vaccines. Unbelievable.
Just the fact that you're bringing up the gene modification thing really sends a lot of shivers down my spine. If you'll give me just a second, I want to talk to you about, we here at Red Pill Reports, and a lot of our audience believe that in mainstream entertainment, they show us a lot of the plan. They show us a lot of the things that we can expect to see coming down in the future. And I got wrapped up in this show from the UK, and I promise I'll bring this back home, and it'll make sense when I talk about this, but there was a show in the UK called Utopia, and it was only on for 2 seasons. I think they did 12 episodes, and the show was in no way, shape, or form finished when they yanked it off the air, and it was on BBC Three, I believe, and you guys can go try and download it. You might be able to find it on Hulu or something, but ostensibly, this entire show talked about a two-prong plan that the global, you know, elite would like to put into play. You know, one of the main agendas, allegedly, of the global elite is this radical depopulation of the Earth, right? And they're not able to really get that accomplished through war because it's just too costly. You almost can't kill enough people with war. So apparently, according to this program, they were looking for alternative ideas back in the late 60s and 70s. One of the things that they came up with was genetically modified food, and the way that it worked is that they would introduce this genetically modified food to the entire global population food supply through wheat or whatever, and then that would instill a genetic change in everybody who ate it. And then I brought that up with somebody, I believe it was Deborah Tavares the other day, and she said, you know, Monsanto already has a patent on the animals that have eaten a certain genetically modified product that they produce. I think it's part of the Syngenta program, but they actually have a patent on the animals after they have ingested this. And really the only way to do that is to be able to show that there's been some sort of genetic shift that has taken place. So we've kind of already got that first part of the prong done. The second part of the prong was a fake global pandemic followed immediately thereby with a global vaccine. And in that vaccine would be some sort of compound that would activate the genetic mutation that had taken place, and it would essentially sterilize the whole world, right? That was essentially the whole outline of that show. And I watch that stuff and I think, man, this makes way too much sense that they would try and do something like that. And I know that this is a little bit out in left field for you, Doctor, but I just wonder if you would comment on any of that. Does that sound like something that these people might actually be trying to do?
I don't think there's any might about it, JD.
Oh, gosh, that scares me, Doctor.
You know, there's a video that I got sent to me. It's actually more of an audio than a video of someone who had done an entire, it was a 3-hour presentation, was talking about this agenda that has been put forth since the 1960s. And, you know, when you look back historically, and this is another sad thing, I mean, we could spend a whole hour talking about problems in the education system.
Right.
I mean, education system no longer really teaches history. They no longer teach civics. They don't teach state history or take it seriously. And so our country is losing its roots. It's losing where we came from, not only way back in George Washington days, but what happened through the 1960s with the civil rights movement. What happened as recently as 100 years ago with the women's right to vote. You know, when women were able, went to jail and marched in the street and did all sorts of things just to get the right to vote, and now we don't vote. And that was less than 100 years ago, that what we went through in order to be able to vote. And then we went through the 60s and in the civil rights movement with, you know, what happened with Martin Luther King. And when you look what has happened to the black population, I mean, think about in the 60s and 70s, you know, I was that the black population, particularly the southern blacks, I mean, had a very strong family unit, very Baptist, very involved with this, you know, the spiritual, you know, those Negro Southern spirituals that were just so moving and everything. And when they started busing in the 60s, and they destroyed the family unit of the black population.
That's right.
And now we've got all of these other things that are moving forward that if you just take a little bit of time to look at it, you can see it. All the pieces come together. So, you know, I was watching a video the other day online from the song Only You, and it was this black quintet, and these five, and I don't remember the name of the group that sang it. I think it was like the Jenners or the Jenkins or something like that, and from the 60s, and it was this beautiful song, and it was like probably Ed Sullivan or something, and there was these four men and a woman. They were black men, and they were dressed in a sports jacket and a tie, and the woman was dressed really nicely. And think about what our bands look like now.
Oh, right.
And then they showed pictures of, like, in the 60s, and I was doing a piece, an article I was writing about the change in the educational system and why college may not be the best idea for your kids these days because of the cost.
Yep.
And that college used to always be about the privileged. And I looked up some pictures and you saw kids, people from the 60s, 70s, even the early 80s, that going to college, they were dressed up. The men had on either nice polo shirts or jackets and a tie, and the girls were dressed neatly and nicely. And look what we are now. I mean, we wear oversized hoodies and sloppy things, and guys have their pants hanging off their butt. And,
right.
You know, and it's like, what has happened to our country and our sense of pride and civility and pride in ownership and pride in taking care of our physical appearances? And so it's a very long-winded dissertation on what you just said about what is happening to the United States of America and our individual sovereign states.
Well, and it's so big to, you know, to see all this stuff start culminating to some sort of nexus, you know, especially with the vaccines and with the GMO foods. That really scared the heck out of me. I want to sidetrack just for a quick second because I'm really glad that you brought up, basically the oppression of the Black South, because, I think there's another angle to that story. And I would really recommend people go check out a website called blackgenocide.org. I read a really startling statistic the other day, that said that more than 50% of African-American children in this country are never born because of Planned Parenthood. And I'm not somebody who's going to say, you know, I'm not somebody who's going to argue against a woman's right to choose. But at the same time, I think that there is an agenda there going on. I don't know if you have any feelings on that, but I think that there are so many agendas that have been levied against individual portions of our country in terms of different, you know, different sects of people. It's astounding when you really start digging into these things, Dr. T.
It really is. It, you know, there is no matter, you know, I know no matter what your belief system is about God, even if you're agnostic or atheist, you still, I think people have an understanding there's a difference between right and wrong and good and evil.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And so our country was founded on Christian principles and good thoughts. You know, I mean, we had Bibles in schools and we said prayer in schools and, you know, the evil's just has done everything it can to gut that and take that away. And somebody, I read something the other day that I think it was on a Facebook post that they said, it's interesting that they allow Bibles in prison, but they do not allow Bibles in school.
Isn't that interesting?
And I think that speaks volumes, you know. I mean, I was growing up, you know, first thing you did in the morning when you walked into, after when class started when you were in grade school, was you stood up and said the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we want to take Christ out of Christmas and we can't have nativity scenes in public places. I mean, we're doing everything that we can to eliminate the good in this country. And if you're of the Christian faith or or at least belief in God and a higher power and universality, I mean, you can see that you take God out of the equation or you take goodness or out of the equation.
You got nothing.
Nature abhors a vacuum, right?
Well, it's not even that. It's that people really don't understand the relationship between morality and law. And it's not about, you know, we get into these concepts about the divine nature of people and everybody gets all, oh, God, we're going Bible or we're going Baptist on people. And it's not about that. It's about the divine rights that we talk about in this country have nothing to do specifically with one specific religion in my mind. They have to do with something called liberty, which in my opinion should be the number one export of our country. And liberty has to do with the fact that we all have been granted agency and dominion over ourselves. We are supposed to be in control of our own bodies, and people don't get that. And so I always bring up the example, and it's an awful example to talk about on a Tuesday morning. I always bring up the example of rape, okay? Because rape is forced Congress in any language across the planet. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what language you speak. Rape is forced Congress, and it is the divine right of all people, in my opinion, which is where liberty comes from, that they are protected in themselves because they have that agency and dominion over themselves. But without morality, without the foundation of morality, from what point are you going to mount an argument to tell somebody to stop raping your sister? Where are you going to argue that point from? Because unless you can outline the fact that person has divine rights and doesn't have to be from Jesus or whatever, it just has to be from a creator. Unless you can outline the fact that somebody has divine rights to protection in their person, where are you going to mount that argument from, Dr. T?
Oh, that's well said. Very, very well said. You know, and which brings us back to the vaccine discussion.
Exactly.
I've said for a very long time that the separation, one of the separations between me and my government is at the level of my skin. And if the government can, and if I can no longer stop the government from forcibly injecting me with things against my will that could harm me, possibly even kill me, then I am totally owned by that government.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if we get the government we deserve, and unless we get more participation at the local level, because you think global and act local, so that goes down to your city councils, all the way up to your governor and your governorship and what's happening in California tomorrow in Sacramento and what needs to be happening at state houses across the country. If you want to know what's going on in your state in terms of these vaccine bills, the best place to go is NVIC, which is the National Vaccine Information Center, NVICAdvocacy.org. Go there, sign up for free. You will only get alerts about your state. You won't get alerts for all 50 states, and then you'll know what's going on in your state. In fact, I think we mounted a small campaign here in Ohio several weeks ago when there was a bill that was introduced to mandate the meningitis vaccine for all school-aged kids. And it was just went to committee, and I mounted a small campaign to say, it's going to cost the state of Ohio $21 million in order to vaccinate all of these kids with a vaccine that doesn't even cover the most prevalent strain of meningitis. It has a black box warning on it that if you give the meningitis vaccine in combination with the Gardasil vaccine, that there's a black box warning on the increased incidence of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Anybody who wants that vaccine can get it. We don't have to mandate it. The antibodies only last for 2 years. And when I talked about the costs and how much this was going to cost the state, as far as I know right now, just by starting that letter campaign and making a few phone calls and getting a few activists here involved, the bill was stopped in committee. So you need to, everybody needs to act locally about those bills. And if you go to NVIC Advocacy, you will know what's going on in your state. You'll see if you are one of 36 states that have bills introduced to take away your rights to refuse vaccines for your children and what's coming down the pipeline for you. I wanted to circle back and finish one sentence that I was saying about that there's a, you know, we aren't going to do all the cancer vaccines, which I think what you commented on, JD, was great. But there are 141 vaccines in the pipeline that will get approved because the ACIP committee approves everything that comes across their desk. I've never seen them, there wasn't a vaccine that they didn't like. They are now in the process of approving a meningitis B vaccine, which all of the science that they've done so far says that the reason they have not been able to develop a vaccine using that strain, which serotype B is the most common cause of meningitis, of the types of meningitis, serotype B is because serotype B doesn't create much of an antibody response and the amino acids on the surface of that bacteria match very closely the sequence of the amino acids in the brain. So if they develop an antibody to meningitis B, there's a high probability that that antibody will go across and cause an autoimmune inflammation in the brain.
Oh my God.
So now they're about ready to approve that vaccine.
Well, we're on a slippery slope. I think that's the most thing, you know, most definitive thing that we can say at this point in the broadcast. We're getting ready to go to this 3-minute break. I want to come back and I want to address those people out there that might be a little too scared to stand up at this point. We had this idea of the big anti-vaccination petition that went down, and I got a lot of people saying, you know, I don't know if I want to affix my name to that because that seems like that's where they're going to get their list from. You know what I mean? So when we come back from this break, I want to talk about that and just get your perspective on that. I also want to talk about edible and potentially aerosol disbursement of vaccinations and see what your thoughts are on that. Dr. Tenpenny is our guest. DrTenpenny.com is her website. Stick right here, guys. 3-minute break. Appreciate you guys all being here. Any questions you have, throw them in the chat room, guys. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos. that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sill, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sill?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at hempusa.org.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of MyPatriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
This is London calling on Longwave.
The Chris Everard Show. Sundays. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break and for hanging out in the chat room, a full crowd in the chat room today, and a lot of live streams happening at truthfrequencyradio.com right now. Really, I know a lot of people clamoring to get to hear Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I'm very excited to have her on the program today. Thanking you guys again in the chat room today. So before the break, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, we were talking obviously about vaccinations and the pending slippery slope that we are finding ourselves on. And, you know, we'd kind of talked about going to the NVICadvocacy.site and signing up so you can find out more information as this stuff relates to your own individual states. But there are a lot of people out there who think, if I sign my name up on this list as somebody who doesn't want to get vaccinated, well, that seems like a pretty convenient place for the government to just get their list for said housing visits that may be pending in the future. What are your thoughts on that? And are we at a point now, Dr. T, where we got to bite the bullet and stand up regardless of what the ramifications are going to be?
JD, you're absolutely right. If we don't if not now, when? If not me, who?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're at that point because, you know, even your private medical records to – when you go to the doctor and you think that you're just talking to your doctor as he or she impolitely types away at the computer, you know, putting everything in there that you say instead of looking at you, talking to you, looking you in the eye and talking to you,
mm-hmm.
or touching you with their stethoscope or putting their, you know, holding your hand if you're scared or something like that. No, instead they're impolitely required to type on the computer, to type all of your information into this electronic medical record, which is then required to be given to the government. And the electronic medical record standards, in fact, I wrote a whole article on this. If you go to drtenpenny.com and you look under the blogs, there's an article that I wrote on, as a blog post saying your doctor is required to give your information to the government. And one of the, and they, there were criterias of different, over time, over a 5-year period of time, which is what they do, that slippery slope of introducing things, the additional requirements that they need to be, the boxes that need to be checked in this electronic medical record, and now one of them is immunization status.
That's just so frightening.
So you are already being tracked, I guess is my bottom line, of whether or not you are fully compliant, partially compliant, non-compliant. You're already in the database if you've ever been to your physician's office. So what difference does it make if you stand up? Because if we don't stand up, it's the fear that we have that stops us from being successful.
That's right.
And if we would, you know, I used to have a post on my Facebook page that said, what would you do if you were not afraid? And when it comes down to what's happening in our country now, I mean, it's the responsibility of all of us, but I would be so bold as to say that it's the 30-somethings that need to stand up stronger than ever because, you know, I'm at the tail end of the baby boomers. I'll be 57 in a couple weeks. And all of us are going to die off and go away a lot sooner than you are, you know, God willing, right?
Hopefully. Well, yeah.
And so you need to stay. This is going to be your country soon.
Uh-huh.
And even the people who are in Congress, I mean, a lot of them are in their 50s and 60s. Sooner or later, they're not going to be reelected, and there's going to be new people. This is going to be your country. What do you want it to look like?
That's right.
It's time to stand up and take charge of it.
Man, I'm just got to say, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I think one of the main problems that we have in this country is that most of the people are led by the media in asking the wrong questions. And, you know, we could look at just about any topic right now. One of my favorite topics is this police brutality issue, especially because I live here in Missouri and I'm very close to Ferguson. And, I know a lot of people who kind of live in that area. And to see the rhetoric that goes down between my friends on Facebook when things happen, and a lot of these people have kids, and it's just so startling to me that nobody wants to have the conversation, is this what we want from law enforcement? Or is there a causality to this violence that we see erupting in the black youth in St. Louis? Was there something that caused these things to exist? You know, could potentially giving a low IQ person who has a military background and is potentially on statin drugs, a fancy costume and a bunch of military equipment, could that go wrong? You know, is there potentially, maybe we need to have that conversation? Or if you co-opt the music industry and fill kids in the inner city full of rap music and glorify violence against police officers and women and then give them drugs from the CIA and, basically screw up their education. You know, is there causality there? Have we done this to ourselves? And is this the country that we want to live in? I'm always astounded that there aren't adults asking these questions. It always seems to be that I'm surrounded by kids who are just pointing fingers and saying, well, these people are doing this and those people are doing that. But there's such a larger picture going on right now. You know what I mean? There's every issue has causality at some point, and we as adults have not only the opportunity, but the responsibility to decide if this is the country that we want to live in, because it's our country and our kids are getting raised here. You know, I mean, it's coming down to the brass tacks as far as I'm concerned, Ms. T.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. And, you know, it can be overwhelming to feel like there are so many issues, because just as you said, JD, it's like, it's pick an issue. There's
mm-hmm.
a problem.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what issue it is. If it's gardening, there's a problem because of pesticides.
Exactly.
I mean, you can pick any topic. And I think it's incumbent, and that's why I think your radio show is so important, because you obviously address all of these things. It's important to be aware of all of these different issues, but the next step then is pick one
yes.
or two. that's closest to your heart, that can get you passionate about, that you can get involved with and say, I'm going to give 6 hours a month or 8 hours a month, 2 hours a week to totally dedicated to doing something about these issues that I really care about. Because people have jobs and lives and homes and sick parents and dogs, and they have all sorts of things that are pulling at them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could dedicate 2 hours, a minimum of 2 hours a week, maybe that's, 30 minutes a couple days a week, something like that, to get really passionately involved with something you care about. And then there are thousands of people doing that. That's how we'll make a difference, because you cannot be a full, most people cannot be a full-time activist. And most people would get so overwhelmed by the problems in so many different areas that it puts you in a place of being paralyzed by the fear of,
that's right,
like, and also feeling like, well, I'm only one person. What can I possibly do? And so you can't do everything in all areas, but if you pick one or two areas, you can do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find all kinds of people in your communities. You go online. I mean, like the meetups, you can start a meetup and say, hey, I'm really passionate about this. Who wants to join me? And let's see if we can spend, 2 hours a week just really making a difference to whatever that is that you're concerned about.
I agree. And I'll tell you, we say that all the time here on the show, is that, this whole process is basically three steps. The first step, you got to change your heart. And I don't care what religion you're in. I don't care what spiritual view you are. All of the advice from every spiritual guru ever indicates the following thing, that it's your job. You have to change your heart. And by changing your heart, then you can change your home. And by changing your home, then you can change your community. So I totally am fully on board with Dr. T here saying, you got to find something that you're passionate about, because that affects your heart. And it's obviously going to be something that affects your home. And it would not surprise me at all to find out that there were other people in homes, much like yours, probably very close to you, that have a lot of similar ideas. And that's how we do this. We take back one community at a time. And then before you know it, we're a whole nation of interconnected communities. And I also wanted to touch on the fact that this fear issue, they really keep us in fear. And I still think that that's part of this agenda. And I know that you'll back me up on this, because fear causes stress responses in your body. It makes it more difficult to think. It makes it more difficult to react to all this garbage that they're showing us on television, the wars and all this horrible scandals that come. You can't react to any of that because you're afraid all the time. And getting out from under the fear, I think, has got to be mission number one. Don't you agree, Dr. T?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what does fear stand for? False evidence appearing real.
Yes.
And then there's this other expression that says, feel the fear and do it anyways.
Right. Roger that.
Because once you walk through that fear on the other side and you've accomplished something, you feel so good about yourself. You feel so good that, now what else can I take on?
Mm-hmm.
So you really only have to do it once, maybe twice. And then you get a whole new sense of purpose, a whole new sense of intensity, of strength and courage. I mean, fear is the opposite of love, really.
That's right.
And so if so which side of that do you want to be on? Do you want to be on love, positive movement, I'm going to feel it and do it anyways, or do you want to let fear be your master? And just say, oh, I'm going to, hunker down in my little space. And if I don't talk to anybody about this, if I just keep to myself, because, oh my gosh, if I speak out about this vaccine issue, everybody will say mean things to me. So, what did you learn in kindergarten? Sticks and stones can break your bones.
That's right.
Names can never hurt you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've allowed this thing to grow to such a large proportion because we haven't spoken up.
That's right.
We've allowed people to stomp all over us, which circles back to what we were talking before about history and about how, when you go into city, people all across America, and you see town halls and you see the whole central areas which were meeting places in the middle of cities, those were the places where people used to stand up and debate.
Yeah.
They used to stand up and say, and we've taken the debate out of it by polarizing things and making people wrong.
Exactly.
I mean, if I'm a yes and you're a no, we've polarized each other and we're going to hate each other over it.
Well,
and we're we're going to, instead of just saying, let's both position, let our points out there, then maybe by expressing it and discussing it, both of us can come closer to the center of somehow finding a point that we can agree upon.
And that's what they're trying to avoid. We talk to Deborah Tavares about this all the time, and she talks about the Delphi technique, and that's a way that these people can really frame the argument. They can get the polarized. I'm so glad you brought up that polarized view, because that's part of the agenda. You know, they give you the option between A and B. You know, let's just take a random example, like gay marriage, okay? And I'm not going to go down either road with gay marriage. I don't care what you guys think about it. But the argument always becomes, is gay marriage okay or is gay marriage not okay? That's where the polarization comes in, where my question, which is macro, says, why does the government has any, and you know, play in whether or not you get married or not? Why is the government even involved in that? You know, taking the big step back and asking a broader question is usually not allowed in this Delphi technique, which is how they frame these arguments. And then they use these polls on the television and they say, oh, 70% of the people think this. And then you find yourself watching that and thinking, oh, I'm not in the majority right now. I must be crazy, or I must have to think, you know, something different. I wonder what everybody else knows that I don't. It's part of this whole Delphi control technique. And it's, man, they are efficient at it these days, Dr. T, you know?
They are extremely efficient. But they've got, you know, I mean, what all of the big media stations are owned by, what is it, like 3 or 4 companies now?
Mm-hmm.
And so they write the scripts, and I've seen those things that I think that Conan O'Brien did a couple of them, where they said on one day they took all of these different video news clips from all across the country,
right,
on the exact same day, and they, the 6 o'clock news, and they said the exact same things,
like
the exact
word for
same
word.
Words,
yeah.
Word for word, from New York all the way to San Francisco and in between. And if people saw those, and if you don't think that the media is absolutely controlled and a propaganda machine,
oh, man.
What piece of dirt is your head hiding in?
Right.
You know, that, if you can't see that. And so when we look at those things, and when you talk about polls, I've often wondered if there really are pollsters, or if people just like sit in a room and flip a coin, or
I'm sure
if
they
just go, well, let me see, 70, wet thumb to the wind going, 70% sounds like a good number. Let's write down 70%.
Right.
You know? Oh, it's such a control thing. It's so bad with the television, and you cannot get people to not believe it. In fact, I'm not sure if I mentioned this previously in one of our conversations, but when I wrote my book Foul, which is about the bird flu, it was written in 2005 in real time, mm-hmm, of what was going on with bird flu, and there's a lot of politics in there, and the whole premise of the book is that I equated the outbreaks of the potential deadly pandemic viruses were being caused by environmental pesticides and chemicals and contaminants.
Right.
And we really can't vaccinate against that because it's chemically related. But there was an article that I read in the Wall Street Journal, and I saved that article to be part of the introduction to my book. And what the article was about was that they had done a survey that during Gulf War I, that if someone had heard a news story and then later the news story was retracted, did they believe the first news story or did they believe the retraction? And they did this all over the world. It was a really interesting study. And the conclusion was that if in the German population, if they heard the story and heard the retraction, they didn't really believe either one of them.
Right.
So they were like, whatever. In Australia, if they heard the story and the retraction, they said, well, I'm glad they corrected their errors and we believe the retraction. In America, if they heard the story and they heard the retraction, that a huge percentage of the population believed the story was true, no matter how much they tried to do to refute it or retract it.
Wow.
And so if that's the case, then the government and the powers that be and the people who write the press releases, the pharmaceutical, big oil, big gas, big food, big pharma that does all this stuff for writing the press releases for the news report, they understand that once it goes out there, if it's retracted, Americans probably will either A, never hear the retraction, or even if they hear it, will still believe what they heard in the first place because it was told on television.
Oh, we're so conditioned. That's so fun to be part of this team. I just love it. I just love it. Okay, Dr. T, I know that you've got to get running on to your actual...
Oh, I've got a little extra time than you think.
Okay,
I do.
Perfect.
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Because I wanted to get I hate to just monopolize your time here, but I wanted to ask you kind of a personal question, just kind of as it relates to my life. You and I have talked off air, and I've talked on air about it as well. A lot of listeners out there know that I have a younger brother who was afflicted with autism. He's very highly functional. He's actually got two master's degrees in opera. Go figure. But anyway, one of the questions that has come up in my family and with people around my family, people are wondering if there's potentially more risk. Say I were to go out and get lucky enough to have children, because my brother was affected by something, and I'm 1,000% sure it was the booster shots because I watched it go down, but let's just take the devil's advocate role and say it's an environmental cause that causes autism. Do you feel like in your experience that my children are going to be more likely to experience the same type of condition, Dr. T?
That's an excellent question, and I don't know that anyone knows the answer to that for sure. However, we pay a lot of attention to genetic propensity to heart disease, mm-hmm. and to cancer, autoimmune diseases, diabetes. Does it run in your family? I mean, that's always part of your family history. I think it's abhorrent that we don't include vaccine injury as part of those questions when you talk about family history.
Okay, yay. Okay.
Does that make sense, what I
yeah,
just said?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that, you know, if you're at the doctor's office and they do part of your family history is that both of your parents and all of your grandparents had diabetes and heart disease, well, then that increases your risk of diabetes and heart disease because of the genetic tendency towards.
Okay.
So I do not understand why vaccine family history is never taken into consideration, even amongst siblings. So let's say you had four children, and your first child had a really severe reaction. Well, I would think that because it's the same genetics, same mom and dad, if it is, the same mom and dad, same house, same food, same clothing, same laundry detergent, same everything, that those kids would be genetically of the same condition, right?
Mm-hmm. You would think, yeah.
But the doctors would never say, well, since your first child had this severe reaction, we probably shouldn't vaccinate your next three. It's not taken into consideration at all. Or if the parents have a really bad autoimmune disease, or they are diabetic, or maybe the parents had a bad reaction when they were a child and were only partially vaccinated, that's never considered to be a reason for an exemption.
Right.
I think it's terrible. I think that's just one more way that our government has decided that every single person in this country must be vaccinated with every single vaccination on time and on schedule with no exemptions and no exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason I think this drive is so strongly in that direction is because there's a growing population in this country and around the world of completely unvaccinated kids.
Uh-huh.
And most of them are healthy, have never even been on an antibiotic, they do well in school, they don't need OT, PT, speech therapy, food therapy, sensory integration issues, they don't need any of those services. And as we get more and more kids like that, it's going to be more obvious that, oh my gosh, look at these kids, what uh-huh. makes them so different? Oh, the only thing that's different is they don't have any vaccines. We cannot have that population to compare to.
Right, and I think that's part of the agenda. I've got some friends who've got three children, never been to a doctor, they don't have social security numbers or birth certificates or anything like that, obviously never been vaccinated. They are the brightest, most shining examples of human beings I've ever seen in my life. They're my favorite tiny people on the planet. They are charming and sharp and just so full of life, and you can see it in their eyes. And I'll tell you, you go to some of these sporting events locally at like junior high schools and things like that, and you can look out across the kids and you can see who has been affected by this stuff. Even Deborah Tavares says that they're basically stroking these kids out with some of the things that they're putting in these vaccines.
I agree that that's true. And so we can't have too many of those, you know.
Yeah.
Because then it's going to be completely obvious that what's causing this damage to the brains and to the souls of these kids,
mm-hmm.
literally. I mean, if your brain is what connects you to your higher self and your higher power, whatever your belief is, like we were talking about earlier, if that gets knocked out, well, then not only have you lost connection to humanity, you've lost connection to spirit.
That's correct.
And we can't have too many of those on this planet. And so this push for this 100% vaccination rate, I mean, when they withdrew the bill in Oregon the senator that had proposed it and then got so much heat about it that she pulled it off the table. She said she was not going to stop until the vaccination rate increased in Oregon. Well, the vaccination rate in Oregon is already 93%. So that tells me that the other agenda is here, that they are really pushing to 100% vaccination rate.
That's right. I'm really glad you brought up the spiritual aspect too, and the fact that your brain really does connect you to that outer, the outer ether, so to speak. I'm a huge proponent of that. And since we're kind of on that subject, I'll throw you out into the woo left field, which is what we do on Friday night when we get all crazy and ask crazy questions. But what do you know about the pineal gland, and how important is that in terms of your spiritual connection? And if you have any, decalcification advice, I'm sure people might be interested in that.
I don't have any decalcification device. I wish I did.
Okay.
But everything that you read from a spiritual perspective all talks about that your pineal gland, your pituitary gland, your hypothalamus, which is all part of your autonomic nervous system, which is your automatic nervous system. It's the part of your body that makes things function that you don't have to think about, like breathing and heart beating and digestion, absorption, and all of those things. I mean, it's your autonomic nervous system mm-hmm. is the place where when you focus or you meditate or pray, that you put the energy through there, and that opens up that whole crown chakra. And so I believe that, I don't know about decalcifying it, but I do know that I believe that that's part of what happens with some of these brain injuries, is that just goes away.
Right.
And I'll put a little plug out to a seminar that I went to in Arizona last weekend. I went are you familiar with the work by Patricia Cota Robles?
No, I'm not.
Her work is just, I love her work. She was a family counselor by training, and she's been doing this spiritual work with the I Am Presence for 25, 30 years, and she has free seminars across the country, and then a big seminar in Tucson in August. And I went last week to Arizona to visit my my family. My brothers-in-law and their families all live out there. And while I was there, I attended her seminar. And so anybody who's interested in this type of material and interested in these types of works, I would strongly encourage you to check out her information.
Can you spell her name for us? I didn't get
sure.
The last one.
It's Patricia, and then it's Cota Robles. It's Cota-Robels.
Robels. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. She has she has a good newsletter, and I really like her materials. They're very loving and warm, and which I believe that, you know, I grew up in a very fundamentalist church, and I kind of grew up with the fire and brimstone stuff.
Right.
And as I've gotten older, I've realized that that's another control mechanism that happens through the church, and that's really not what, our higher power would want us to believe that love is.
I agree with that, too. Dr. T, we are just about out of time. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Do you want to maybe just give a plug for your clinic and the websites and things like that and leave us with some words of wisdom?
Surely.
Thanks.
I would love to have people come and visit me at my clinic. I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio. We've had people from all 50 states and almost 20 foreign countries come to our clinic to get well and get off their medications. We're located in Cleveland. The website is 1010imc.com, with the IMC stands for Integrated Medical Center. Mm-hmm. So 1010imc.com. You can reach me at info@tenpennyimc.com. Go to drtenpenny.com for new insight and information. And there's a new website that I just love and does a lot of posting on my Facebook page, and it's called Edgy Truth. And they really do post out some really edgy articles about edgy politics. We talk about, there's things on that website about what you were talking about, JD, about the police state that we're in. I mean, there's a lot of really good information there. So we're trying to do the best we can to get people involved, motivated, upbeat, and I so appreciate it being part of your show.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? You make our show. This is like the best day of the week for me. Everybody in the chat room is saying how much they loved having you on. Great guest. I mean, I could go on and on. People just love you, Dr. T. And I want to encourage everybody again, seriously, after the show, between the break and the commercials, send some positive vibes again to Dr. Tenpenny. We got to make sure this woman is healthy so she can continue to get out there and motivate all of us to fix the stupid country that we live in. Because, you know, without people like Dr. T out there, we're not going to get this done, ladies and gentlemen. There's not people out there who are brave enough to be advocates for truth the way that she is. And so I really want to encourage you guys to support the website and support her and everything that she is doing. Dr. T, I'm going to let you go just a hair early today so you can get off to work and make some actual, make some real difference in other people's lives. But I really do appreciate everything you're doing and appreciate you taking the time out to join us on the Red Pill Reports today.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Absolutely. Take care, Dr. T.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys once again for hanging out with us for that hour. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate having Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on the show. Just such great information. Really hope you guys took a lot away from that. Keep it right here on TFR, Roger Sales Show. Live will be up next. Join us tomorrow for L.A. Marzulli. That will be obviously a fantastically interesting show, and I'll keep you guys in the loop on whether or not we're going to have a Straw Bale Garden show next week as well. Oh, if anybody cares, BDI 588 today. Thanks, Truth, getting it through in the last clutch there. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Make sure you check out all the other great hosts here at TFR. Take care, guys. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.